Well, hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Are you seeing spring move in where you are? Well, I've been walking around in my backyard and having some of those fresh dandelion greens and enjoying watching things sprout up through the ground. The snow is finally gone here and the birds are singing and it's just very nice. Well, this week I'm going to share some sounds from my recent travels to Sedona, Las Vegas, and Death Valley. But first, inspired by all that, I've chosen a Desert Oracle episode from the archives. It's called These Enchanted Lands, and it was created by Ken Lane, February 16th, 2020. Have you ever had a place calling you like this? Listen in and let me know. I'd love to hear your story. Well, here we go.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert global headquarters of the weird. Right here in the Great American Desert, the Southwest. Now, New Mexico calls itself the land of enchantment, and that's what you always call places filled with spirits. The spirits of place. Enchantment. Enchantment, like so many words we've watered down, means a lot more than thinking somebody is charming. Which also doesn't mean what you generally think it does. Unless your favorite website is, like mine, the Etymology Online. We are pretty much on a psychic Tinder date together, you and I, if that's your favorite website. Or maybe we're just already members of a secret order. A secret order that must soon make itself known. Enchantment means that you have been enchanted. You've been won over because somebody did some magical chanting, and all of a sudden, as Buck Owens wrote and sang, "You got me under your spell." Maybe somebody bought a charm from the Bruja and now you're in trouble, especially with springtime on the way, the time of the horned gods. You might dismiss it all as just glamour, but glamour is a spell too. That's what the word means. Jameson's 1825 supplement to his Etymological Dictionary of the Scottish Language has glamour gift as the power of enchantment. Jameson's original edition, 1808, looked to Old Norse for the source of the word. And Zoiga's old Icelandic dictionary has glam signy, illusion. Probably from the same root as gleam. We ought to get Jackson Crawford on this show just so I can get the pronunciation for a couple of hundred old Norse words that always seem to be relevant to the topics on this radio program. But the word translates to gleam sight. Gleam, as in something shining. And sight as in second sight. As Scatman Crothers' character told Danny, well, she called it shining. Both grammar and glamour meant more or less the same thing not so long ago. The people who had the power of words, the ability to tell the old stories, to give prophecy, to receive information, like the biological radios we are, well, they would be the druids, the priestesses, the ones allowed in the inner sanctum, the sacred places, the old groves, the tabernacle, the open room atop the seven towers, where the old magicians sing the old songs night and day. As Jerry Lee Lewis liked to say, think about it. A lot of people come to the desert seeking clarity. Well, you are not going to get it while waiting in line at a tourist spot in Joshua Tree, that's for damn sure. Maybe on a mountaintop. As long as you're alone, you need to be receiving at the nonverbal level, and you cannot have people jabbering alongside you, not for this kind of work. Well, it's enjoyable to go out in the wilderness with good people. But that's a different kind of thing. You want to talk to the others, you go alone. And you prepare for disappointment, as most of the time you get nothing. Nothing but a beautiful wild day in a beautifully wild place, which is quite a lot and good enough for most people most of the time. Some years ago, when I was living in the mountain foothills of Yucca Valley, in a strange, long house I'd seen in visions and kept sketching when I was trying to draw something entirely different, I slept late on a Saturday when the house was empty and quiet, and I had a long dream. A long, beautiful dream. I thought I had awoken because I was in the same house on a bright desert day. But to my delight, the landscape had transformed. You know what it looks like around Yucca Valley, around Joshua Tree, the bleached, yellowy boulder hillsides, the Mojave Yuccas. None of that was there. Instead, the landscape was of red rock and red soil with brilliant green junipers and pinyons everywhere and a fantastic energy rising up from the very ground, a low hum from below. Not quite audible. A vibration. The manifestation of the supreme sound of God, as they say in the Hindu holy books. Felt, not heard. Where was this place? Well, the spell broke, the glamour receded, and there I was in the Mojave again. But seeing this rich red and green landscape of eroded rock and gnarled juniper, I knew I had to find out where it was in the daytime world, the waking life. It was pretty easy to find the exact landscape. Just took a couple of days of looking at photographs of arid places around the world, places known for that rich, rusty red geology. Well, it was Sedona. kind of obvious. But somehow I had never been, even though I went to middle school in Arizona and logged a lot of good school field trips and overnight camps, visits to the Grand Canyon, to the ruins of Casa Grande, to that desert science camp at Lake Pleasant where I first met people who loved the desert the way I had begun to love it. But I'd never been to Sedona in particular. So I got my affairs in order and I headed out there the next week. Now, Sedona is not like Joshua Tree, and it's not like the little tourist towns around Zion, around the Grand Canyon. It's something different. For one thing, it's a summer home for a lot of rich people from Phoenix. It's cooler. There are rivers and creeks. It's just a world away from Phoenix in August. But that makes it dull, too, that part of it. Any place that's made to cater to the luxury interest of John McCain or whoever is going to have a stink about it. So I avoided the art gallery malls with those rancid fake Native American $1,000 uglies and the golf club restaurants and the areas where those godforsaken helicopter tours rumble overhead. All that horror that could be avoided if the whole place was a nature preserve instead of a lot of real estate development and abused national forest lands and a couple of real sanctuaries. Well, finally, I found the place I'd seen. It was Red Rock State Park, and I pulled up on a cold, late winter weekday afternoon, and I had the place to myself after an hour or so of walking. I wasn't entirely sure what was happening. But at some point, like a true Sedona New Age nutcase, well, I found myself sitting on a rock ledge and holding on to the deep red rock on either side. Because when I touched it, as opposed to walking atop it, I got this charge and I recognized the hum, the strange vibration. And there were images that went along with this, flashes, shards of information. It was both physical and mental, not that you can divide the two, but it encompassed thought and feeling, all the senses, especially that sixth sense, the glam sight the old Norse wizards chanted about, the shining. And I just did not know what to do with it. In time, those flashes of whatever developed a voice I could hear in my head. And I wound up taking some time off work and typing up a book of letters, epistles, written to a group of people I did not know existed for real. Not letters from me. I wasn't in a position to write letters like that to anybody. And then 6 months after I published this little book, which I called Dignity, based on a recurring theme of the letters, I saw those first wild images from Occupy Wall Street in Zuccotti Park, that concrete stockbroker's lunch spot down by Wall Street. And the place was filled with people that I'd seen, Those faces, that crowd, that strange energy. And so I got out there as quickly as I could, and it was all as I had been shown. As thousands of people had been shown, maybe millions, who knows? But people had come from all over. They'd seen it, and they'd been drawn there, like Richard Dreyfuss saw that Devil's Tower in the movie. That mountain, the white man named Devil's Tower, even though it was a beautiful and holy place to the people who lived there first. So I would drag people down to the Occupy Wall Street camp whenever I could. People I knew, people who lived in New York, who for whatever reason had avoided the scene. The busy and chaotic and messy scene that was Occupy Wall Street. Some of them got it, some of them saw it. Others found it distasteful, a little scary. What if things did change, then what? Would I lose my place? Would they come for me? Kanye showed up for a few minutes. One day. And he was wearing so much jewelry that I almost felt bad for him missing the point like that. But Kanye went nuts from the visions too. Now he's traveling the country on a church revival tour with gospel choirs. It gets us in various ways, you know? Kanye was this crude, vulgar, wealth-obsessed, critically acclaimed hip-hop star. He still is, mostly, but he's trying to get out. He's trying to get free. The prognosis is not good, though, for anybody who gets blasted by this stuff. Anyway, a week or two after I left, after I was back in the relative safety and obscurity of the Mojave Desert, well, that's when Michael Bloomberg signed the secret midnight order to send in the goons, send in the police clowns in their riot gear, with their tear gas and fire hoses, rubber bullets and Klieg lights and urban assault vehicles. They cleaned the place out fast, and that was the end of Occupy Wall Street. At least that's how it felt at the time. Another movement crushed, another natural uprising looking for a focal point, collecting there and being violently dispersed by the owner of Bloomberg News, a corporate empire built on selling nonsense to the rich, selling lies. Selling lies through the old scarcity system. The Bloomberg Terminal. If what's happening today feels like it's linked directly to back then, to Occupy Wall Street, to that month-long occupation of a concrete corporate place for junior stock jobbers to eat their lunch and nervously inhale nicotine, that's because it is. In the 8 short years since, which only feel long when you have to live through them, we once again see the forces rise up once again. Both sides, so often the very same people. The people who were brought there, lured there, called there to try to make it happen. And the people who hoped, thought, believed they'd crushed it all, nipped it in the bud. Enchantment. When a teenaged Edward Abbey stood in that empty boxcar choo-chooing across the great American desert, the feeling he got from gazing upon that landscape of red rock and juniper, of mesa and mountain, that was enchantment. He was back a few years later. He could not get the place out of his mind. He was back after serving as a military policeman in post-World War II Italy. The old Roman Empire. He was back in the land of enchantment. And then the Grand Canyon and Arches, Death Valley, Moab and Tucson, a grand tour as a seasonal ranger, college student, newspaper editor, unemployed poet, constant walker, scribe of the Wild Southwest. He never got rich. He never got too famous. He never found peace. But he tried. I guess I better clear something up, because I'm already about 2 years behind with everything, and time is running out. Time is always running out. It only runs in this one direction during our day-to-day struggle. And we are not getting more time. So I don't want to waste yours. Recently on this broadcast, I was lamenting the state of the world, as I sometimes do. I've always sort of thrown myself into mad pursuits, lost in beautiful causes, do first, contemplate later, and I guess it's just our nervous era, with most of the life crushed right out of us. I just wonder if anybody does that anymore. We've mostly become these biological robots, nervously paying or not paying bills, worried about everything all the time. The age of anxiety, constantly assaulted by garbage nonsense designed to make the biological robot feel shame and sadness about everything. What are you doing wrong today? Well, according to the latest updates on your phone, on your handheld bummer that you only put down when you're in the shower, it looks like you're doing everything wrong again. Relationships with other humans? You did it all wrong, according to social media content generators in desperate fear for their gig economy jobs. Eating? All wrong. All the time, and it's all your fault. Why, you idiot, you don't even know how to peel a banana correctly, according to some illiterate clickbait posted to a website. A website bought by a vulture capital fund, which then fired all the writers you used to like there. Exercise, retirement accounts, wine pairings, home maintenance, preparing oatmeal, slicing apples, pest control, fuel-efficient driving, cleaning products, laundry habits, streaming video, wedding invitations, divorce proceedings, ethical vacations, college admissions, credit card interest rates, screen time, posture when sitting or standing or working or sleeping or weeping, cholesterol, comprehension, constipation, composting, you're doing it wrong. All according to the great beast. The great beast.
We are connected to...
So, while I deeply appreciate those of you who've been sending me resumes and heartfelt letters and kind offers to help out with this or that magazine-related chore from wherever you are, I need to make it clear that last week's lament was just that, lamentations about the situation. So that's what it was about. Wouldn't it be nice to quit your New York media job and not need money and abandon everything and move to the desert? Like one of the old desert mystics who just walked away and somehow made their journey from Rome or Alexandria or Antioch to the wild desert waste beyond the Nile. And then they would carve out a hole in the limestone, and that would be home for life. So many people wrecked by the inane hassle of life in the empire just left, and they just moved into these desert holes in the early centuries of the Christian era. So thanks for responding to these lamentations. I appreciate it, even though, like I said, there's no paying job, there's no career. If such a thing existed, I'd be first in line. Now, if you happen to know a publishing company or something, if you're sitting on a pile of golden treasure like the dragon and the Hobbit story, and you want to put it to use before the kids take it all to save the planet, I'm all ears. Such people do come sniffing around now and then, but the rich are not quick to part with their riches unless they're buying a couple hundred million in television advertising for themselves. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast from Joshua Tree on Friday nights, and you can catch us on a few public and community stations in the western USA, and you can get our podcast through all the usual corporate outlets. Our next live event will be the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs, March 12th, Thursday at 7 p.m. outside around a real campfire, free to attend. Use the code Desert Oracle to get a discount on your room if you're staying at the Ace, and we shall do it again on Thursday, April 2. We've got an events calendar on our website, desertoracle.com. We've also got a Patreon set up, and boy, am I thankful for those of you who contribute to the operation out here. Become a patron of Desert Oracle for as little as $2 a month. We'll take more. And we'll keep making the program because we love to do it. And by we, I'm talking about the whole Desert Oracle team. Red, blue, black, silver, of course. Tommy over in Enterprise Sales. Cordelia, our interim CTO. Max and Yolanda in the main lobby. And Dimitri, who manages the warehouse. Good night from the voice of the desert.
We are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Last February, my daughter-in-law, Julie, proposed a girls' trip to Sedona. My granddaughter, Bree, made this a three-generation trip. None of us had ever been to Sedona, and our experiences together has us talking about making it an annual event. Here are some recordings I made as we explored several of the trails in the Sedona area. I'm going to also try to get some of the tree frogs in. We camped along the Verde River, and it was just delightful. And if you hear some wind, well, that's kind of a normal thing in the desert in the spring.
You were scared.
Oh, 100%.
A painted red start.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was the same as the titmouse.
Don't know. So you're probably hearing people's voices because this is a very popular spot. It's one of the four vortexes in Sedona, and it's just a half mile or so trek up here from the road. And but it's, for me, my old bones, it's pretty strenuous, but you know, just have to rest a lot. And after any trek like that, I feel tingles all over my body. But I'm facing a spire It's almost like a tower, two towers that are back to back to the north of me. And the rest of what I see around me to other directions except for the west is just a lot of sandstone, all different colors, which I guess has to do with the age, how old the sandstone is, different layers of it. A nice juniper forest as far as I can see. The sky is blue with a lot of virga clouds, which are really wispy and artistic looking. Of course, what cloud doesn't look artistic? So we've done another vortex that was on another trail, which I'll tell you about, but that one was spectacular in its own right, and I love how, just like anything in nature, every place has its own personality. It's very cool to see it appreciated by so many humans. You hope that that's going to help keep it nice. Okay, all for now. Okay, my journey companions on this trip have been my daughter-in-law, Julie. I was calling my daughter-in-love. And my granddaughter, Bree. And they've been with me on every hike that I've done, but they've always been able to go a little further and much younger. And they're definitely athletes. So anyway, I'm going to have them tell you about the hikes we did and that they did. And I'm going to have them give you their memories about it, whatever they remember.
So the other vortex we went to was this very open red table of rock. And it was by running water with some tributaries coming into it. And that was really pretty because the sounds of the water were really nice. And the bird songs were vibrant. And we went further to Cathedral Rock, which had a crazy, like, red rock view of the summit. And on our way back down, when we were in the parking lot, we saw a summer tanager. That was lovely.
What color was it?
Red. Bright red.
Nice.
Yeah. Maybe even orange, is what my mom says. Yeah.
So would you recommend that hike to
people? I thought it was lovely.
Is it one of the less known ones, or...?
I wouldn't say so, but, like, it had traffic, you know, and there was quite a bit of people, but it wasn't, like, overpowering. People were just enjoying the river and the rock. Yeah.
Would you say it was shaded or exposed?
Shaded for the first part, and then pretty exposed once you hit, maybe half a mile before the Cathedral Rock summit.
Cool.
Yeah, and that part is not for the lighthearted. It's just steep and slick rock, and there have been search and rescues there, so definitely some scrambling required.
And we saw a lot of bikers, too, right?
We did, yeah. Yep.
Trail bikes.
On that trail below it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. You can enter from different...
Great watering holes from that.
Mm.
Swimming holes,
yeah. Yeah. And then the other hike we did was the West Fork.
Your turn, Julie.
And I believe we had, at West Fork, how many crossings? River crossings?
13, so 26.
26 river crossings. And we were crossing which river?
The West Fork. The Oak Creek.
No, yeah, Oak Creek.
West
yeah.
Fork.
And with those river crossings, I mean, you could wear river shoes, I suppose. But what we found was canyoneering shoes with neoprene socks, booties. I think I'd recommend that for your walking. And so then you don't even care. You just trample through the babbling creeks. And we saw people of all ages. One thing that we got to do, though, was walk in a canyon. Well, you get to the end of what you think is the end of the maintained trail, right? And it goes on for 2¾ miles more.
In the water.
In the water. That water was frigid, but it felt wonderful on hot feet that had been walking a couple miles, would you say?
Yeah.
More than a couple. Probably like...
3.
Yeah, almost 4.
Almost 4.
Yeah.
And
we had lovely snacks. We recommend snacking when you're hiking.
Mm-hmm. Water, lots of water. And these two also made sure that when we had those stream crossings, oh my gosh, I was attended to like a queen. Bree, my granddaughter, carried a big old stick so I could use that for balance, and she carried that between every crossing. And both Julie and Bree kind of took turns as far as holding my hand if I needed it for balance, because some of the rocks that you step on are kind of wobbly. But it was just wonderful. Great experience. Did we see any other birds new to you?
The titmouse. I think it was a brindled. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it, right. But I heard it.
Yeah.
What was the copperback? Red copperback.
It was a red start, but I can't remember which kind.
Uh-huh. That was, I think, like, yeah, new to me in my head.
Uh-huh. And what about the nuthatch?
I've seen those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've seen the white-breasted ones before. Okay. Okay.
The raven was cool.
Yes.
There was a raven hopping around in the river. And, yeah, we stared at it for a little bit, watching it bounce. Yeah.
I think we were being followed by a Steller's Jay when we were coming down, it seemed like. Yeah. Anything else you want to add that I didn't...
Yep. Oh, when we got to the end, there's a lot of like establishment where somebody had lived and built up a home and such. I don't know, I think it was in the 1920s something. But I found it very interesting along the fence posts, they had hiking sticks lined up.
Oh yeah, when we got back down.
Just like if you had been skiing and you put your skis up on the rack. But these were hiking poles.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Very cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Julie had to return to work in Colorado, but Bree and I continued on to Las Vegas, where she introduced me to the Clark County Wetlands Park Nature Preserve. My son lives in Las Vegas, so I've been to the city many times, but never to this place. I've never been so close to a roadrunner several times, and we also got to see a great horned owl murmuring to its soon-to-be fledglings, perched along a sturdy cottonwood limb. I did not get to record that owl, but I got some other sounds. Well, then it was time for Bree to head towards her National Park research job in Washington. But the adventures weren't done yet. My son Josh, his partner Kelly, and their little 18-month-old Gemma caravaned with me to Death Valley, where we met up with Kelly's parents at Stovepipe Wells Campground. We camped out there a couple nights and spent a day exploring the Mesquite Dunes, where my granddaughter Gemma experienced her first encounter on a sand dune. We also visited the Artist's Loop, the Salt Flat, and the Water Still at Lake Manly, and the Ubahibi Crater. On our last morning in the park, my son and I hiked the Mosaic Canyon.
Did he startle you?
Yeah. So you're rounding her up. I see what you do, like they do with the cows.
Yeah.
Or the sheep.
You can feel it, like this one. It's been getting baking warm in the sun more.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like that's warm.
Yeah. What kind of tracks you think we're seeing?
I don't know. I mean, those are paws.
Mm-hmm.
Bunny.
Pretty tiny.
Yep.
She wants to go by herself.
Yeah.
Exercises, I guess, of maybe some National Guard jets. And of course, in the canyon, it's louder. It's fun to watch, though.
In all this traveling, I got to listen to so many different people and hear about what draws them to such places. This got me thinking about the reasons I go to new places. Sometimes it's the idea of someone else. Sometimes it's a sort of calling like the one Ken Lane shared on the episode we heard today. As our valley and mountains come into a new season with many visitors, I wonder why they came for the first visit. What first brought you to the Gallatin Valley and all the adjacent areas? What keeps you here? I want to know your answers. Please call or text me at 406-404-6246. My thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. You can leave me your message or text about anything on your mind, especially my question this week, which is, what originally brought you to the Gallatin Valley? Again, my number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Till next week, stay well and sweet dreams. Elliot Brood takes us out today with The Valley Town from the album Mountain Meadows.
yourself outside. Morning train, pulling away. Hear the whistle fade and set yourself at
we heard that.